This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Jody McDonald, issuing in a guest that we haven't talked to in a bit, because the NBA season has just gotten underway. We'll have him on a couple times over the course of the year. He's one of the best who covered on a day-in, day-out basis that he's doing these days for Forbes and Heavy.com. Our buddy Sean Devaney joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. Sean, how was your New Year's?
Very good, Jody Mac. How about you?
Good. Watched a little basketball, as a matter of fact, into all the bowl games and everything else. And, yes, had a couple of good meals. That's all I need. And you have a smile on my face. And I have a smile on my face because of the NBA being back in the start of the season. What would you say you learned most about what the rest of the season's going to look like after just a week and a half of play?
Well, I think it's been so far so good on the COVID stuff. You know, it has been just a limited number of missed games. You know, that's going to be obviously a big factor here with anybody, any of these teams as we go forward. We haven't seen too many guys missing games yet, and so that's something certainly to keep an eye on. But you know, beyond that, you know, it's shaping up right now to look a lot like last year did, where you're going to have the Lakers at the top of the West. The East is going to be much more of a jumble. You know, we'll see if the Bucks pull it together and play like they did last year. But you know, you're going to have, I think, a lot of the same dynamics that we saw last year with the Clippers sort of staking their claim as the number two team. We know that didn't work out well for them last year in the playoffs, but I think in the regular season we'll see Lakers maintaining that number one spot, the Clippers right behind them, and then in the East we'll probably see the Bucks, and then sort of a mass of teams, and I think that's going to be much how this is going to play out. I think the one wild card in all this is James Harden. Where does he wind up, and does it happen quickly? Does it happen, you know, quickly enough so that a team, whether it's, you know, a Philadelphia or Miami, can get him in there fast enough to really adjust their style of play to what he does, and have that be effective, and have them go from being, you know, one of that mass of pretty good teams into becoming a contender.
I like NBA empowerment for their players. Certainly, I believe in the NBA more than any other sport. Players can dictate where they play, where they're going to get traded to, where their career goes, and more power to them for that. But sometimes it can run amok, and you get the feeling that it's the inmates running the asylum. Harden has tried to flex his muscles in Houston. He can't just dictate a trade, so he is still ongoing. He's out of tonight's lineup, but he has played in the first three games, so the Rockets have played pretty well, as a matter of fact, without getting any preseason in. Is there too much power for the NBA players right now for their own good?
You know, I think the thing that so many players tend to forget, and this is something that I remember I talked with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar about this 2 years ago, when Anthony Davis was, all the stuff was happening around Anthony Davis, and he was still with the Pelicans, and would he get traded to the Lakers or not, or would there be another team? You know, Kareem talked about how he went in 1974, before the 1974 season, met with the owners of the Bucks and said, look, that's it. I'm not going to sign on to stay here. I would like to be traded. They did it in a hotel ballroom. You know, they had this kind of conferences meeting in a hotel in downtown Milwaukee. And that was sort of how Kareem let the team know that he wanted out. And it was all done sort of on the down low. And he told them, I'd like to go to New York. I'd like to go to Los Angeles, one of those places. He had a couple other teams that were on the list. And he said, you know, we're going to have to make this happen. And it did. And when you do it that way, when you do it quietly, you know, when you're not going through Twitter and having, you know, as much coverage as possible, you are enhancing your chances of actually getting traded. When you do the things that James Harden has been doing, you lower your trade value, you make it more difficult to get traded. Anthony Davis made it pretty difficult for the Pelicans to pull off a trade because they were dealing from a position of weakness. That's the position that James Harden has put the Rockets in. So that's the thing to me that really stands out about this is that players, if you want to get traded, you've got to realize that you're part of the process. You can't destroy your trade value as you're looking to have a deal made.
John Debney from Forbes and Heavy.com talking NBA with us here on the here on CBS Sports Radio. The Phoenix Suns have gotten off to a pretty good start. 5-1, best record in the NBA early going here. I know the Chris Paul addition kind of changed the dynamic on that team, but they started making strides in the bubble last year, and they've been able to pick it up right where they left off to start this season. If we acknowledge that the Suns are a team absolutely headed in the right direction, who should be getting the most credit for that?
Well, I think you'd have to give James Jones, the GM, some credit for that because he's made some really good draft picks. DeAndre Ayton, actually the number one pick from a couple of years ago, has not played that well. So, you know, they're doing all this without him really hitting his stride. But no question, you've got to credit James Jones for having the vision to bring in some of the players that he brought in and then pulling the trigger on the Chris Paul move when it was time, you know, because you've got to let a young team develop and figure out its roles before you decide, okay, what's the veteran? Who's that guy who can put us over the top? And I think Chris Paul is a perfect fit there. You know, Ricky Rubio was okay, but, you know, not a guy who can score, not a guy who's going to lead the team in the clutch. Down the stretch in those crunch time situations, that's the real difference that Chris Paul makes. And I think we've already seen that with the Suns, where they haven't necessarily played, you know, they played Denver the other night and didn't necessarily play a great game, but they were right there with them, and Chris Paul helped them win that game down the stretch. That's what Chris Paul does, and I think that between he and James Jones, that's to me, those two guys deserve most of the credit.
Want to get your read on a team in the Eastern Conference who, again, we expected to step up. And they've been okay so far this year. They've been kind of yin and yang. When they've been good, they've been very good. When they've been bad, they've been surprisingly and disappointingly bad. And that's the Brooklyn Nets. The combo of KD and Kyrie, I saw both of their first two games. They both look great. The team looked great. They ripped off two good wins. And then they turn around and lose two games in a row with those two guys taking a rehabilitation day off, call it load management, call it coming back from injury, whatever you want. They, by the fourth game of the season, they're both sitting out together, which I had a problem with. But Kyrie is who Kyrie is. He's a strange individual, but he's a talented player. And again, I thought two games in, you could make an argument for him for MVP. Last night, he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn when they turned around and lost the Atlanta Hawks. Is that kind of a different dynamic team that they have in Brooklyn going to work this year, in your estimation?
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. That there's just such a weird dynamic there. It's a real challenge for a first year head coach like Steve Nash, and he did well to bring in guys like Mike D'Antoni and Jock Vaughn, guys who have been head coaches in other places. So he does have those guys to lean on. But in the end, he's the head coach, and he's got to be able to figure out this chemistry. I think it's going to be a real issue for them because if you've got these guys wanting to take a game off here, a game off there, it's going to be hard to get everybody on the same page. They suffered a pretty bad injury with Spencer Dinwiddie going down with his ACL. Now he hadn't played well in the beginning of the year, but he's important to them because they like to have as many ball handlers on the court as they can. You've got Kyrie, Dinwiddie and Durant, you've got three ball handlers. That allows you to play really, really fast and take advantage of how much talent you have on the offensive end. Without Dinwiddie, that changes that dynamic. So already you're seeing an injury step in and affect them. And then you have to wonder, you know, how often are Kyrie and Durant going to play? Is it going to be enough that they can form that chemistry? Are other players going to get a little resentful? You know, we've heard a lot about special treatment that some players get. I think they're, you know, the guys who have been in Brooklyn and really helped build that thing up from, remember how bad they were just a few years ago. I'm sure they're not going to like the fact that these two new guys come in and are getting the kid glove treatment. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge, I think, for Steve Nash to hold that thing together and to develop chemistry running up against all these other factors that we're talking about here.
We're talking to Sean Dabney, NBA insider for us here on CBS Sports Radio. I want to ask you about what happened with San Antonio the other night, and I have to explain myself carefully here because I think it's going to make me sound like a misogynistic guy. I didn't think it was that big a deal that you had Becky Hammon step in and fill in for Popovich as head coach of the Spurs. Maybe because she's been there for a couple of years, and I think of her as an NBA coach, and she hopped in and took over for two and a half, three quarters or something like that. It wasn't like she was named the head coach of the Spurs. That would be a huge deal. Mm-hmm. It's gotten a lot of coverage, and I get it. She's the first woman to ever be a head coach for any period of time, less than a game, in the history of the NBA. But she's an NBA coach. That's what she is to me, and I know that, and I acknowledge that. So the fact that she got to step up because Pop got himself tossed, I didn't think was that big a deal. Am I misreading this whole thing? Am I just being a jerk?
I would never say that, Jerry. Come on. No, I think that, and I actually agree with you because when I saw that it happened, the first thing I thought was, wait, didn't that already happen before? You know, didn't she, wasn't there another time that Pop got tossed and she took it over? And I guess it hadn't happened before.
No.
So, oh, geez, okay. I think it does say something for, you know, the fact that there are women coaches in the league right now that you don't think that much of it, you know, that it isn't necessarily a big deal. I think that's a good thing. It shouldn't be a big deal. It should be, you know, is she a good coach? And she's obviously done a really good job there, and they really like her. So, you know, if that's what she's being judged on, as she should be, then that's what the big deal is. And I agree with you that that the real turning point will be when a woman, and I think it will happen probably within the next 3, 4, maybe 5 years at the most, that we'll have a woman as a head coach in the NBA getting a legitimate chance. Certainly, the more you see women getting interviews, getting those opportunities, then that'll be more and more commonplace. But I agree. I didn't think it was that big of a deal because I think, you know, I don't know that we necessarily need to celebrate that. I think we should celebrate when she gets a head coaching job, which, you know, by all measures, she probably deserves, and we'll get a shot at it eventually.
Man, if I were a betting man, I'd bet she's the one who gets that job that you're talking about within the next 5 years. And, oh, by the way, it seems like to me almost every single night there's a female referee in an NBA game. We've got a handful of them now, and it seems like every time I turn on an NBA game, one of them is doing a job and doing a good job at that. All right, last thing. We suffered a loss today in the NBA. If you're any kind of an NBA old school or old head fan like yours truly is, and you for a slightly lesser amount, Paul Westphal passed away. A guy who I remember rooting for when I was just a kid, Celtic guy. Then he went to Phoenix, had a tremendous run with the Suns. Also a very successful coach in the NBA, got him to the Hall of Fame. He passed today at the age of 70. And just because his and my timeline are somewhat close, I didn't even know if he was 70 years old, and it's a tough loss and a tragic loss for the Suns organization. His making the Hall of Fame is something that I think should play a role in every single sport. For a guy who, like Westphal, was both a very good player and a very good coach, I don't know if he was a Hall of Fame player or a Hall of Fame coach, but right. when you combine the two, it made him a Hall of Famer. And I think that should happen more often in sports. Do you agree with my stance on Westfall that he's a combo Hall of Famer, and that's a good thing?
Yeah, it's kind of a contribution to the game sort of thing. And there's no question that that Westfall, with both his talent as a player and his talent as a coach and the success he had as a coach, you know, he'll always tell you that that he should have won a championship with that Suns team in the early 90s going against Michael Jordan. He had a very good run in both of those capacities. And so you look at the whole thing and you say, what was this guy's contribution to the game? You know, is somebody who might have had a better 10-year playing career but never coached. I think you got to give Westfall an advantage because of what he did as a coach, what he did in that part of the arena. So, and one of the nicest guys. You know, I was really saddened to hear that as well. He was somebody who I always felt like I could call and he'd let me know, and you know, he'd be the first to tell you that some of the stuff in the league now, he really saw it with when he was coaching DeMarcus Cousins, that he just kind of lost, you know, he kind of lost touch with where the game was today. But he always had thoughts on it. He always had thoughts on what was going on in the league. And like I said, just one of the nicest guys you could imagine.
Was glad when he went from the Celtics to the Suns, because I couldn't root for him as a Celtic because I was a Knicks fan growing up. So you got to hate all the Celtics. I kind of liked his game. Then he went to the other conference. All right, now I can be a flat-out fan of this. Great stuff. Oh, let me ask one more thing. I did mean to ask you this. Certainly the bubble last year. Did you go down and cover it at all, or did you do your NBA work from afar? How did you handle the end of the season into the postseason in the bubble?
Yeah, I stayed out of the bubble, which was a tough decision, but something I felt I had to do, and I credit the league. They made everybody very, very accessible. We're all able to get into the Zooms and ask our questions and things like that, even if we weren't there. So I did not, but I thought the league did a great job making it accessible, and maybe they'll continue some of that here into this year. It's sort of been up and down so far as media access goes, but I hope that they can learn something from the way they handled the bubble and pass that on to this year.
You can still answer the question, though, which is good. And it's, you quasi answered it about how the NBA is doing media and relations and stuff like that. But has anyone said anything to you about maybe something they learned or did in the bubble, character building, team rapport, the way they use their practice time or whatever? Was there anything that will come out of the bubble that will become commonplace in the NBA, even though they're no longer in the bubble?
Yeah, it's a good question. I have heard things that guys have done sort of individually, but I don't know how much that's going to, really kind of pass on to the way teams are handled more broadly. You know, I know, okay, Jamal Murray, for instance, changed some of the way he was doing his training. We saw, we saw what the results were in the bubble last year. So, you know, I mean, there's individual anecdotes like that. I don't know if there's anything really. Obviously, we're still trying to figure out how they're going. You know, they've got the contact tracing going on now. So some of that stuff from the bubble is being carried into this year, but that's all just COVID-19 related stuff. But as far as the basketball angle of things, that's a good question. I don't exactly know if there are lessons that were learned there that teams are taking and applying to the season.
Keep it in the back of your mind when we get you on, when we get a little closer, say midway point of the season, we'll have you on again. I'll ask you the same question. You say, yeah, you know what,
yeah,
I thought about, Jody?
I'm going to ask around a little bit.
Or say, absolutely nothing, Jody. It sounded like a good question, but actually it was an irrelevant question. Either way, I'll hit you up with it again the next time we get you on. Sean, always a pleasure. Glad to have you. Glad to hear you had a good new year. Continue success, and we'll be talking down the road. My pleasure. That is Sean Debney from Forbes.com and Heavy.com. Covers the NBA for them, giving us good NBA insight.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly.